Well, it may not be December yet. I think we are still November 30th. But I think it's fair to say the Christmas season is officially here. I don't know about you guys, but for me, that means the arrival of four main things. The first, eggnog. Low fat, of course, non-alcoholic. Come on, people. The second, ugly Christmas sweaters. The third, I turn on the notch to Coast 103.5 to get a little Mariah Carey in there. All I want for Christmas is you. And fourth, we live in sunny Southern California, but I still long for kind of the cooler weather. And so kind of the end of October, early November, you see me in the grocery store and I walk a little bit slower in the milk aisle, waiting till they finally stock it with my eggnog. And then, like I said, in my car, I'll kind of preset the radio channel to get 103.5 going on there. And once Thanksgiving hits, it's game time. And then I just long to wake up in the morning. I know it sounds cheesy, but I love putting on a flannel, cool, crisp fall air, which doesn't really happen that much out here. Cup of coffee in my right hand and kind of seeing the steam of the coffee collide with the fall air. And so I'm that crazy guy who will go and plan and book a vacation in the beginning of February in New York City when it's usually a high of 20 to 25 degrees. I'm crazy, but I absolutely love winter. I wish we could have winter year-round, actually. I'm kind of growing old of some of the summers here in Southern California. So I've been preparing and just looking forward to this season for months now. And really, Advent for the church is kind of, that's exactly what it means. Expectant waiting and preparation, not for eggnog or Coast 103.5, but for the birth of Jesus. And so Advent, I think they mentioned it this morning when they're reading the readings for the candle. It's an old Latin word, and all it Advent means, it literally just means coming. And so just as I look for and long for eggnog, so we as Christians, we look for and we long for the coming of Christ, in which he came 2,000 years ago, as well as when he comes back again to finish his work. And we usually leave that one off in our Christmas reflections. And so as a teaching team here at New Life, rather than kind of reinventing the wheel, so to speak, or trying to come up with some catchy, innovative, fresh way of advertising this Advent season, we kind of just settled on this theme of simply Christmas. That really, we just want to go back to the basics of Christmas. There's nothing new for us to add, and that's actually a good thing because the birth of Jesus and his second coming is incredibly powerful and life-changing. And so for the next four Sundays, starting today, we're looking at hope. And then next Sunday will be peace, and then joy, and then love. And then for Christmas Eve, we'll all gather together, sing some carols, and we'll see how Jesus in his birth fulfills all four of those things beautifully. He's our greatest hope, our greatest peace, our greatest joy, and our greatest love. And so this morning, we kick off Advent with this idea of hope. And I want to take a slightly different look at the Christmas story and its message of hope this morning. Because if you're anything like me, I think we have a tendency to kind of minimize the power of hope that Jesus brings. We've either heard the story every December for years and years and years, and we can spit out the details, and we're kind of maybe bored by it, actually, if we're honest. Or this message of hope in Jesus kind of just becomes one other thing on the list of the 15 things that we do in the month of December. And so it just kind of becomes normalized. So that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. If you have a Bible with you, go ahead and open up to the first book in the New Testament, the book of Matthew. We also have these Bibles underneath the chairs for you, and we'll give them to you for free. That'll be our Christmas gift. If you're using them, it's page 676, and we'll also have it on the screens behind me. Chapter 2, I'll read verses 1 through 16, but I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, so just bear with me. All right, Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. And then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. After they had heard of the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And then skipping to verse 12, and having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. In our last verse, verse 16, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Now, at first glance, this Christmas story seems to have nothing to do with kind of our cheery, jolly Christmas carols and traditions. I mean, for goodness sakes, this text, this angle of the Christmas story is really about murder. Let's just say it for what it is. But doesn't this passage begin with a question that I think every human at whatever stage in their life asks at some point? For the Magi, this question was, where is the one who is king of the Jews? And of course, for all of us, when we ask this question, it's not necessarily with that exact title or those very words, king of the Jews. But we all ask for, we all long for, we're desperate for someone or something who will bring us hope. And so there's a famous French philosopher who said, hope is for the soul what breathing is for the living organism. Where hope is lacking, the soul dries and withers. And so I think most humans, regardless of religion, of gender, of culture, or age, I think we can all agree that we're searching for hope. And so even as Veronica mentioned there in her prayer, I mean, it doesn't take long for you to just to turn on the news and to see things like Ferguson, wherever you are in the spectrum of that. No doubt we need hope. And so these astrologers, these magicians, and scholars kind of debate who exactly or what they were, and that's beyond the point. Because for Matthew, I think he names them and he brings them up because these people are outside of the Jewish faith system. They're not these churchy religious people. But they're on a trek because they've heard probably faint rumors that some king is arriving who's bringing God's justice and righteousness. They were probably faintly aware of, though not in detail, of ancient prophecies like in Isaiah that said, when this king comes, he'll be called Mighty Counselor, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His justice and righteousness will reign forever. And they'll use crazy metaphors and illustrations like lambs will lie down with wolves, that death will be a thing of the past and all wrongs will be forgiven. This is the rumor of hope that's swirling around that these magi walk up to and ask, where is the one, king of the Jews? Isn't that some of us today? Searching and tiptoeing for hope. And so the holidays and Christmas can actually be some of the hardest times of life. For those of us, unfortunately, it's a reminder that someone special, a family or a friend, is no longer with you. For others of us, it's kind of maybe a feeling of guilt and shame that we don't have enough money to buy our children or grandchildren the exact toy that they want. And so it can be a very, very tough time. And I'd venture to guess that even if your family is in a great situation right now and you weren't experiencing those things, and that could be quite a few of us, I would still want to say that you're still in hope of something. It just may be the new iPhone 6, a cute, charming boyfriend, or See's candy or something. But you're still hoping for something. And so these magicians, these astrologers, show up to Jerusalem, which is kind of like our modern-day Washington, D.C., if you will, to find out where this supposed king is. And then Matthew gives us kind of this weird remark in verse 3. He says, "When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him." It's an odd response for such good news coming, for this king arriving who's bringing all this justice with him. Or did King Herod and the social elites in his circle, they caught on real quick actually what that meant? You can't have two kings in one place. And so if this little baby boy was king, well, King Herod actually wasn't King Herod. This was actually disturbing and bad news for them. And so King Herod's got to do something about this. A couple of days ago, Thanksgiving night, was it 3 days ago now, it's kind of become like an informal tradition in my family that after we eat and feel fat and lazy and all that fun stuff, we go and see a movie. And so this year, we decided to go see Mockingjay, which is the third movie in the Hunger Games series. And I unashamedly absolutely love these movies. Some people hate on them. I kind of got involved in a Facebook thread of people hating on the Hunger Games on Juno's Facebook. And so I went on there and kind of had to give my little insight on them too. I absolutely love these movies. And there is, in my mind at least, a profound clip in the first movie. It's about a minute long. And Jacob's going to play it for us here in a couple seconds. And there's this dialogue on hope. And hope's kind of the running thread amongst this whole series. And so if you haven't seen it and you don't know the context, that's completely okay. I think still you'll at least be able to grasp something from these movies, and I think it will shed insight on kind of what King Herod is feeling. So Jacob, if we can go ahead and play that.
Seneca, why do you think we have a winner?
What do you mean?
I mean, why do we have a winner? I mean, if we just wanted to intimidate the districts, why not round up 24 of them at random and execute them all at once? It'd be a lot faster. Hope.
Hope?
Hope. It is the only thing stronger than fear. A little hope is effective. A lot of hope is dangerous. A spark is fine, as long as it's contained.
So,
contain it.
Best of you want your husbands to have that beer that he has. I mean, kind of cool. Don't get any ideas. So hope. The only thing stronger than fear. Little hope is effective, but a lot of hope is defective. And I think King Herod would have said those exact words, actually, when this little baby was born. Because they got real quick that if this king is really king, then they're jobless and they're overthrown and they're no longer needed. There would be some type of an uprising, at least. And so verses 4 to 6, Herod kind of turns to his sly, cunning, subtle little self, and he gathers all these religious leaders, these people who know scripture, and he wants to inquire from them, where is this Messiah, where is this king going to be born? I want to know the exact location of him. And they kind of seemingly answer him right away. They say, well, in Bethlehem in Judea, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. And so now, with this information, King Herod goes back to these searching, inquisitive magi, and he says, oh, okay, here's where he is. I want you to go and find him. And he says, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. Now, if you know this story and you paid attention to the last couple of verses that I read, it's quite obvious in this story that Herod doesn't really want to go and worship the baby boy Jesus. This is actually his shrewd way of getting these magi to come back and tell him exactly where Jesus is so that he can kill him. So, of course, well, his plan doesn't really work because we wouldn't be here today celebrating Advent and Christmas if Jesus was actually killed. And so, you know, the Magi receive this crazy dream to not go back to Herod, and Joseph and his future wife marrying the baby boy. They're told by an angel to go to Egypt because King Herod's going to show up and kill all males under 2 years old in that vicinity. And then there is kind of the end of the story. But I want us to kind of zone in on two aspects of this story that I find incredibly practical and insightful. The first is these religious leaders that Herod inquires over and he gathers together. And they know the exact location of where this Messiah is to be born, and they say it right away. They can spit out the answer, and they do it rather quickly. I mean, it'd be kind of like If I told someone, oh yeah, you know what, President Obama is actually going to be in the Burger King right down there by 183rd Street on Wednesday night at 7:30. And then Wednesday night at 7:30 comes by for me, and I'm just sitting in my office kind of doing the same thing as usual, and I have a crazy opportunity to meet the President of the U.S., no matter what you think of him, in a Burger King. I mean, you kind of just don't do that normally. That's a big deal if you have that information. Yep, he'll be born right over there in Bethlehem. And so there's no kind of notice that these religious leaders joined the search committee, so to speak. And maybe I'm kind of reading into this a little bit, but there were one or two other commentators that picked this up, kind of this seemingly complacency that they have. It's as though they forgot the ancient hope that the Messiah was bringing with him. They got so used to this Christmas story that was unfolding. They were jaded by it. They knew the exact details, the exact location, where he was to be born, and what he was bringing with him. But, wasn't that big of a deal, I guess. And as I shared last week, sometimes as a Christian in the Christmas season, the last couple of years, this is exactly how I feel. I can give you the nativity scene. I can tell you where the shepherds go, where the magi, the gifts they bring, Mary and Joseph, the baby, all these other things. But like these religious leaders, I'm honest, I feel kind of jaded by the story. I know it. I hear it every year. I don't react with kind of this mode of expectation and anticipation. So I've gotten bored with this story of hope. And it reminds me of Christmas and gifts in my family the last 5 to 10 years. My parents probably laugh as I say this. I'm not a spoiled brat. You might think this after I say this. But every year, whatever I tell my parents to get, well, they'll get me. And I know exactly they will, as long as it falls within the financial parameters, of course. I'm not going to ask them for a car or a house or something like that. So last year, I asked for an iPhone, and lo and behold, I got an iPhone. Last couple years, it's either been clothes or books or a laptop, whatever it is. Well, that's exactly what I'll get. And so my sister kind of, I think, always teases us. She doesn't like this idea that we know exactly what we're getting, or we get mom and dad gift cards, and where's the fun in that, and it's not adventurous, and all this other stuff. And I'm kind of like, hey, it's cool for me. I don't have to worry about getting the gift and hurting their feelings. I have to go return it to JCPenney or something like that. So I love it. But a byproduct of this is I'd rather sleep in Christmas morning until 10 or 11 a.m., kind of wake up whenever, get my cup of coffee, watch the parade on TV or the Laker game, because I don't have this kind of eager anticipation of tiptoeing to the Christmas tree next to the fireplace to kind of shake the box to see what I'm getting. I know exactly what I'm getting. No anticipation, no expectation, not too much preparation, just a little text. Oh yeah, mom, dad, here, this is what I want for Christmas this year. I don't know what it is yet for this year. And so that's kind of what I'm sitting in. And I think that's what some of us have done with the Christmas message of hope. We're no longer in that mode of eager anticipation and expectation. If we're all honest, I think the Christmas message of hope maybe isn't even all that hopeful for us anymore. And it's interesting, because it just might be because, just like in the original Christmas story, where there was a Herod who cleverly and cunningly told the searching magi who were searching for hope, that he used their search for hope to kill the very thing that was the answer to their question for hope. And so the question becomes, are there some Herods around today who in our midst and search for hope are so tricky and cunning and sly that they divert our attention away and block us from getting the one hope that is going to satisfy us? We humans, we're creatures of hope. It's fundamental to our existence. I don't think you can be a human and not hope. When that happens, we call that depression. And I don't say that jokingly, because depression is actually something very near and dear to my heart. I know people who struggle with it personally, and I've been there, and I've been in that midst. The root cause of depression is no hope. Nothing's going to change. We need kind of this encouraging, positive motivation that something's going to change in the future. And so I love what C.S. Lewis, who's this old English professor who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, and talking about hope, he says, creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. A baby feels hunger? Well, there's such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim? Well, there's such a thing as water. Men and women have sexual desire? Well, there's such a thing as sex. And so he says, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. And so the problem is, I think we usually shortchange our infinite desire for hope with finite things that can't quite deliver what they promise. And so technology, the hope of technology, that's quite alive today. Make your life simple, more effective, easier to use. But then some of us, we know when we use technology, it becomes a little bit more complicated than what it seems like. The hope of politics, that we'll make this world a better place. And then we hear things like Ferguson. The hope of education, I think my generation will say amen to this, that an educational institution, you go there, you get your bachelor's degree, your master's degree, and then you'll get the job that you want, you'll get the money that you need, and the status you've always wanted for, no more. You can get a bachelor's degree, you can get a master's degree, and still be working in fast food or something, and there's nothing wrong with working in fast food. Hope hasn't really come through there. Say the same thing about medicine. This hope to cure cancer, and I hope we do cure cancer, but I'm sure then there'll just be some other virus, some other sickness that will pop up in this endless search for mortality. And especially in this time of the year, in gifts that claim to satisfy, food that promises to gratify, and for some of us attending fun parties, we'll have to offer an alibi. I just rhymed three words, as much the most spoken word as you'll ever hear me do. But there's a reason why marketing exists. We are creatures of hope. And so for me, this hope of technology, yeah, I want a new iPhone 6. I'll take that this year. It'll make my life easier. I'll get emails to my fingertips, sports scores, whatever I want. I can talk to Rachel whenever I want. My life will be made better. And so even this weekend, like Rachel or Juno will attest, I mean, I've been flirting with the idea of getting this new 50-inch HD TV, 120 megahertz, 1080p. Man, this is gonna make my life better. I got so much hope. I'm good to go. Thankfully, Rachel, Mark, you should probably sit on that for a couple more days before you drop a couple $100. Okay, yeah, I think I should. But don't they seem so good and healthy? And they are. But sometimes, just like Herod with the Magi, oh yeah, go come back, tell me where he is so that I too may go and worship him. When in reality, it's kind of blocking you from you finding your true hope. And so we can do the same thing with relationships, especially this time of the year. If you're single, if you're divorced, if you're widowed, it is easy in this time of the year to want that one where you just long for a sense of intimacy. And I say that because I've been there before. Not that I'm married, but I've been without a girlfriend or something, and you see all the Hallmark cards and your friends posting stuff on Facebook, playing in the snow. You just want someone. And that comes to define you. And then once you get married, and the rosy, easy picture that Hollywood paints of romance is actually a little bit harder than what they show it to be. So we could say the same thing, the hope in our jobs, the hope in health and medicine. You place these hopes and dreams at the core of your life, and if you live life long enough, you know that they won't quite promise and deliver what you thought they would. And so there's nothing wrong with an iPhone. I absolutely love technology. I love my iPhone. I think I'll probably get rid of my car first before I get rid of my iPhone. So hear me loud and clear. I'm not bashing on technology. I think if anything, it's a signpost that there is a God who's extremely smart and creative and has given us the same thing. So use technology for the kingdom. Let's do it. For jobs that give you meaning and purpose, yeah, we were made to work. Those are good things, and our God is a relational God, so relationships are absolutely beautiful. So I'm not bashing on any of those things. They're all good. But it's when we see the power of hope for some object or person overtake you, consume you, that's really a clue for our need for a bigger and deeper hope. I don't think we hope big enough. The hope of Jesus is so radical, so disturbing, and so dangerous because it puts all the other competing claims of hope out of business. I think that's what we can learn from King Herod. He got it. He saw the threat and magnitude that this little baby boy brought. It rivaled and showed up his inferior hope to bring peace and prosperity to this little Roman colony. The hope of Jesus is real and palpable in a little trough. And it will meet your deepest longings for joy, for peace, for love. Never disappoint you. Never fail you. And so I know this morning in this room there are countless hopes and dreams. For some of us, we can't wait till about 4 weeks from now to give our child or our grandchildren their toy that they've longed for and see that smile on their face light up. For others of us, this Christmas is the first time that we'll be able to celebrate as a husband or a wife or a mother or a father. And for some of us, the greatest, you know, one of the hopes of Christmas is that, hey, eggnog and fall weather are here. That's me. So whatever your hopes are, may they just be a sample, a foretaste, an appetizer of the hope that Jesus brought 2,000 years ago and will bring to reality when he comes back. It's a hope, as our text says this morning, a ruler who will come, who will shepherd his people. And as the last book in the Bible puts it, this is a hope that will wipe away every tear from your eye, and death and mourning and crying and pain will be no more. That's the hope of Jesus. It's the only thing stronger than fear and what rivaled kings kill for. So I'm going to invite the worship team back up. If you've been here before, you know that we intentionally set apart time for response. Because we don't want to leave this place without God changing lives, and we know that he does and he will. And so the worship team is going to play two songs. We have multiple response stations available. But for the next four Sundays, we have a Christmas tree right here to the right. And inside this brown little bowl, we have ornaments, different colors and stuff. And we encourage you to respond by taking this Sharpie and by either writing a word, a phrase. If you're young, draw a picture. Whatever you want to do that'll signify the area in your life that needs the hope of Jesus. Where can Jesus come and invade you to bring new life, to bring renewal and transformation? So just come up and we'll just form a line here, and I think Tina is going to help people with this, and then go ahead and put this on the tree. And so the next four Sundays, when we talk about hope or peace or joy or love, each week we'll write things on this and we'll see it grow and expand to be reminded of what God is going to do during this Advent season. And if you're with us and you're kind of in the midst of just despair and hopelessness, which is normal and okay, I think we've all been there. The last thing to do, the thing that breeds despair, is being alone and being isolated. So I'd encourage you just to go over there to the prayer station where there's people who are safe, who are trustworthy, who would love to come alongside you and pray with you and to encourage you and to speak the hope of Jesus into your life. Maybe for others of us, it's taking communion, lighting the candles in the back. And if you're with us here today and you've never put your hope before in Jesus and you just want to stay sitting down, that's okay. I just ask you to just talk to God. Ask him just to change you. We've all been there before. And to put your hope in Jesus, who will never fail and never disappoint you. And as Juno mentioned, we have the Advent books available, weekly ones in the lobby, or daily ones available on our website. So I just encourage you guys, as we respond not only today, but for this whole season, and just journey through that. And may this Christmas season just come alive to you. So Lord, we just pray, Lord, that your Holy Spirit would come, that you would have your way, Lord, and we would just be open to receiving what you have for us this morning. Amen.